pockets, kind of like two boxers touching gloves. The real negotiations have yet to unfold.
U.S. lawmakers react to the Trump-Kim summit in Singapore. This is Thursday, June 14th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook and become part of the program. Also ahead in this program, the U.S. president says the North Korean leader loves his people. Not everyone agrees with that. And what about what Mr. Trump said about military exercises? That is stirring some up as well. That and much more, all on today's VOA Asia. The United States is hoping for major, major disarmament by North Korea within 2.5 years. So says U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo the day after President Donald Trump signed an agreement with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un calling for the end to Pyongyang's nuclear weapons program. The top U.S. diplomat, after briefing South Korean officials in Seoul on the Trump-Kim summit in Singapore, said the U.S. most definitely wants verifiable North Korean action to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula by the end of Trump's first term in the White House in January of 2021. He said Trump and Kim reached understandings not written in the document they signed. U.S. critics of the deal said it was short on details and that Trump had made too many concessions to Kim, especially the U.S. leader's unexpected announcement that the United States is ending its military exercises with South Korea, long an irritant to North Korea. More on that later in the program. Trump returned to Washington, declaring on Twitter there is no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea, even though the agreement he signed with Kim does not spell out how Pyongyang will dismantle its nuclear weapons program. Several U.S. lawmakers are dismissing that presidential assertion. VOA's Michael Bowman reports they also rejected any swift lifting of U.S. sanctions amid claims by Pyongyang that Donald Trump did agree to sanctions relief during his meeting with Kim Jong-un.
Democrats are heaping scorn on President Trump's tweet that, quote, there is no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea. Replying on Twitter, the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, said, quote, North Korea is a real and present threat. So is a dangerously naive president. Providing a more gentle response was the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Republican Bob Corker.
That's a great example of hyperbole. I don't think that's what's happened.
Much has to occur before the world can breathe easier with regard to North Korea, says Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen.
The nuclear threat will not be over until they have dismantled their entire nuclear establishment and removed both their enrichment capacity and their weapons.
Lawmakers are also responding icily to reports by North Korea's state-run media that during the Singapore summit, Trump agreed to lift sanctions against Pyongyang as a trust-building measure. A joint statement issued at the end of the summit made no mention of sanctions relief.
I think that's wishful thinking on their part.
The Senate's number two Republican, John Cornyn, told VOA the Singapore summit did not by itself alter the Trump administration's policy of maximum pressure against Pyongyang.
The way I interpret this first meeting, which of course is surprising to everybody, is that it's kind of like two boxers touching gloves. The real negotiations have yet to unfold.
Trump could, but shouldn't, relax sanctions against Pyongyang at any time, according to Democratic Senator Ben Cardin.
The president has quite a bit of authority. He could do things. It would be a major mistake to make concessions. You have to have a game plan in place. You have to have a declaration of their entire program. We have to know about it. We have to have inspectors on the ground.
What exactly did Trump and Kim discuss during their historic closed-door encounter? Corker says he hopes to find out.
Let's have the people around the president come in and talk with us.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is expected to testify before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee as early as next week. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Former U.S. Ambassador Bill Richardson told VOA on this program earlier in the week that he is concerned about no verification of what the North Koreans will do about missile technology in North Korea, no details of nuclear reduction or the peace treaty ending the Korean War from the early 1950s, and human rights. As we continue on VOA Asia, we'll explore the issue of human rights abuses in North Korea. Stay with us. These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. The price of U.S. soybeans plunge on renewed fears of trade war with China. A top judge urges the Philippines to take China to court over reef destruction. The U.S. opens a de facto embassy in Taiwan. China is not happy about it. A U.S. university, the University of New Hampshire, becomes the first to accept Chinese Gaokao exam results. Reports say Amazon is under fire for working conditions at a Foxconn factory in China. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. Speaking in Singapore to VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren, U.S. President Donald Trump said that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un loved his people.
He loves his country. He wants a lot of good things, and that's why he's doing this.
But he's starved them. He's been brutal to them. He still loves his people?
Look, he's doing what he's seen done.
VOA's Steve Miller asked Greg Scarlatou, the executive director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea, if that was an accurate statement.
It's always a good idea to focus on what the president does rather than what he says. The Kim regime is committing crimes against humanity, against its own people. There are 120,000 men, women, and children being held in political prison camps, pursuant to a system of guilt by association called Yeonjaje that punishes up to three generations of the offender's family. This is a regime that discriminates against its own people and classifies them based on their perceived loyalty to the regime. So that is the measure of Kim Jong-un's love for his people, while the regime is investing heavily in tools of death, nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles, while the regime is investing in keeping the core elites happy because it regards all of these three areas as critical to its own survival. While it's doing that, 30% of North Korea's children are malnourished. That is, again, the measure of Kim Jong-un's love for his people. North Koreans live under overwhelming coercion, control, surveillance, and punishment. 270,000 agents of three internal security agencies keep a very watchful eye over everyone in North Korea. Each and every person has to be an informer, reporting on neighbors, family, friends, parents, siblings, brothers, sisters, grandparents, by participating in the Imimban neighborhood watch system. This is the measure of Kim Jong-un's love for his people.
You brought up an interesting point. This is a diplomatic meeting, and it's important to have, for lack of a better word, some niceties said to keep the process moving along. But are there broader implications, not only for those in North Korea, but for other rights abusers around the world, when the president uses such platitudes?
Well, I think that the president is very keen on challenging the status quo. And we have to admit that of all U.S. presidents so far, he is the one who has managed to get some movement on the North Korea issue. Now, moving ahead, the challenge will be to channel this movement. North Korea is a very important precedent, a critical precedent on multiple fronts. This is a regime that is committing crimes against humanity. Will Kim Jong-un be able to get away with crimes against humanity just because he developed nuclear weapons and sat at the same table with a leader of the free world? This is a regime that joined the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, in 1985, then pulled out of the NPT and developed nuclear weapons. This is a regime that joined the Geneva Agreed Framework of 1994, and it subsequently cheated by developing a clandestine uranium enrichment program. This is a regime that has breached each and every international agreement it's had. Will this regime be allowed to get away with this? this would surely create a very perilous precedent, a new world order or disorder, rather, where rogue states understand that the way to prevail over the world's benign hegemon, the United States, the leader of the free world, is to develop weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons. So we're dealing with very serious issues. To the president's credit, he, again, has managed to challenge the status quo and get some movement. But now the big question is, where do we go from here?
Greg Scarlatou is the executive director for the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. Happening now in Asia, Indian and Pakistani forces traded fire along the highly militarized frontier in disputed Kashmir early Wednesday after Pakistani firing killed at least four Indian paramilitary soldiers and injured three others on border patrol. And China suggests the UN Security Council considers suspending or lifting sanctions against North Korea if the country is in compliance with UN resolutions. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. The Singapore summit ended Tuesday with the United States and North Korea committed to denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula, but the seemingly biggest headline does not even appear in the official signed summit agreement, with President Trump repeatedly expressing his commitment to halt what he called joint military war games between the U.S. and allies South Korea. As VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb explains, Trump's decision has left allies and the U.S. service members on the peninsula needing further clarification while drawing mixed reaction from military experts.
A historic moment in Singapore, with Trump holding talks with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and telling VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren he wants to halt joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises that have been taking place for decades.
We are going to get out of the war games that cost so much money. You know, where we, because I think, number one, it's very provocative, and I want to do it, and I think they're very happy about it because it is so provocative, but it costs a fortune to do it. And we won't do that as long as we're negotiating in good faith.
Some experts, such as Kyle Farrier at the Korea Economic Institute of America, were surprised to hear an American president characterize the joint exercises in the same way China and North Korea have described them.
He called it provocative himself, which is not something that any American president, I think, has ever done. It's always been defensive in nature.
South Korea seemed caught off guard by the decision, with a government spokesman saying, quote, "We need to find out the precise meaning or intentions of President Trump's remarks." And a U.S. military spokesman in Korea told reporters troops have received no updated guidance on the execution or cessation of training and would continue with current military posture until they received official word to change course. Analyst Farrier sees Trump's decision to halt the military exercises as a setback and a concession.
If you look back earlier this year, Kim Jong-un had made a statement essentially stating that he understood the validity, the legal validity, the need to hold these exercises. And then now we're a few months later where President Trump is saying, well, no, we're getting rid of these exercises. It's been such a huge turn in events without really much action on the North Korean side.
Others, like retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, disagree, hailing the choice as a bold first step to the ultimate goal of denuclearization.
If taking these actions, and it's just a pause, it's not a concession. We're literally giving nothing. We're simply not taking action here while continuing to train, and we have our capabilities that are not diminished. But if that can lead to a diminishing of threat and lead eventually to a peace treaty, that's definitely something that's in America's interests.
There are 28,500 American troops in South Korea, but only a small fraction, about 3,500 of them, make up the single U.S. combat brigade on the peninsula. Davis suggests Trump could go so far as to make the potential transfer of these troops a negotiating chip in further talks.
What's the purpose of those troops at all? It's to protect us. But if removing those troops can be a component of protecting us even to a greater degree, then that's something we should give serious consideration to.
For now, any change to U.S. troop numbers on the peninsula remains off the negotiating table, as Trump looks to Kim to provide verifiable steps toward denuclearization. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Coming up, the Chinese ban everybody else's trash. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Wall Street Journal reports the White House will try to derail an effort in the U.S. Congress to block the Trump administration's deal to allow ZTE Corporation, China's number two telecommunications equipment maker, to resume doing business with American suppliers. And an Indian chess champion has withdrawn from an international competition in Iran, saying a rule requiring her to wear a headscarf would violate her human rights. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. A Chinese ban on many types of foreign garbage implemented this year has created a crisis for the worldwide recycling industry, which is now searching for new markets for its scrap. As Mike O'Sullivan reports from Los Angeles, the trash ban put the brakes on a multi-billion dollar industry and has had repercussions inside China.
The trash is piling up in Azusa, California, as sorters work to make the output cleaner. In Anaheim, bales of mixed paper that used to be shipped to China now fill a parking lot. Before the China trash ban, a ton was worth $100.
Today, it's relatively no value. It's less than $5 or negative in some markets.
American recyclers say it had been a good relationship. Products made in China were shipped to the United States. Trash was sent to China, benefiting from low shipping rates for returning containers to be recycled and used in new manufacturing. Nearly $6 billion in waste was sent to China last year. Today, much of it has nowhere to go.
Recycling is about manufacturing. And if somebody doesn't want to use those raw materials, then putting stuff in your recycling bin is doing nothing more than playing with your garbage.
China now refuses to take trash in dozens of categories, including low-grade plastics, unsorted paper, and some metal waste. It is demanding cleaner garbage in others. American processors are working to reduce contamination by removing unwanted items.
Blankets, pillows, a lot of things that really shouldn't end up in the stream to begin with.
Despite stepped-up sorting operations, they face a challenge: where to send it. Some of it will go to India, Vietnam, Malaysia, Thailand, or Indonesia. But shipping costs are high and demand is limited, so much of it will go to landfills. China's decision is about the environment, nationalism, and political control, says Asia-based journalist Adam Minter.
When you see China sort of pushing against the recycling industry, it's really pushing against private industry and in favor of state-owned enterprises. And that is very much in line with the way that Chinese economic policy has been going for the last 5 years.
Millions of small-scale Chinese recyclers made China's recycling business possible.
Picking through stuff and making their lives slightly better every day through the money that they made off of that. It had environmental repercussions, but it also raised 3 to 5 million households out of poverty.
Goldstein says China faces hurdles to create an operation as efficient. Also, it could lose a consistent source of recycled materials. Meanwhile, American recyclers are struggling to find a new business model and a home for their trash.
It's waiting for a buyer on the open market. When it sits outside in these conditions and we have rains that come through, you start to see it deteriorate.
And lose more value, a cycle the industry says is not sustainable. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Reports say Amazon is under fire for working conditions at a Foxconn factory in China. A U.S. university, the University of New Hampshire, becomes the first to accept Chinese Gaokao exam results. A top judge urges the Philippines to take China to court over reef destruction. And the price of U.S. soybeans plunge on renewed fears of trade war with China. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. Scientists say due to indiscriminate use of antibiotics for treating even minor infections, many bacteria have developed strong immunity against this type of drug. In their words, we may have already entered the post-antibiotic era, with previously non-life-threatening infections becoming fatal. VOA's George Pudich tells us researchers at Rockefeller University in New York say an enzyme called lysin may prove to be crucial in this new battle against infections.
Every year, about 700,000 people around the world die from infections caused by antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and that number keeps rising. Experts say if we do not find effective new drugs, by 2050, the number of deaths could reach 10 million. One course of action is to develop viruses called phages that attack a specific strain of bacteria, for instance, Staphylococcus aureus, that causes a range of hard-to-treat infections. Crucial for this method is an enzyme called lysin.
When you take that purified enzyme and add it back to a bacteria, for example, in an infection, it will drill a hole in the cell wall, the membrane externalizes like it would normally do, explode, and kill the organism instantly.
After 20 years of research, Fischetti managed to extract lysin from a bacteria-eating phage, so the normally harmless virus itself is not used in the treatment, eliminating the danger it could mutate into a harmful form.
This is just a different way of killing bacteria. People are not comfortable with it yet, but I think once the first lysin gets through phase two clinical trials to show that it actually works and works well, people will be more comfortable with it, and I think we'll start using lysins in addition to antibiotics.
Biotechnology company Contrafact successfully completed phase one of clinical tests with a lysin called CF301 on healthy volunteers infected with Staph aureus. The phase two trial is underway.
We're very encouraged by what we've seen because it tells us that we can use the lysin in addition to conventional small molecule antibiotics, completely different mechanism of action without any observable adverse events.
In the meantime, researchers are trying to develop a lysin that will have the same effect on a different strain of antibiotic-resistant bacteria that causes hospital-acquired pneumonia. George Pudich, VOA News.
Ice loss in Antarctica increased by 75% over the past decade due to a speed-up in the flow of its glaciers and is now nearly as great as that observed in Greenland, that according to a new comprehensive study by NASA along with university scientists. The study shows that Antarctica has lost a staggering 3 trillion tons of ice since 1992. That suggests the frozen continent could redraw Earth's coastlines if global warming continues unchecked. Two-fifths of that ice loss occurred over the past 5 years, a threefold increase in the pace at which Antarctica is shedding its kilometers-thick casing. A consortium of 84 scientists reported that in the journal Nature. It points to the existential threat facing low-lying coastal cities and communities home to hundreds of millions of people. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you, and you can find us at voanews.com. And let's hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.